This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 463. I am Lisa Sheps, and I may or may not be joined by Nick Mayo today, but in any case, I have our famous co-host, Miss Ann Chicklell, here with me in the studio. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We look at theater from many angles, so do not go away.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Give me a head with
it. Is Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. On the show today, we have Austin Shakespeare talking about their show, The Merry Wives of Windsor. And then later on in the show, we will have our exclusive interview with Mr. George Takei. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, Windsor, and anywhere else we want to be. Stick around. Dreaming, flaxing, waxing, dipping me down to their hair. Hold on, I gotta do this the right way. Okay. Well, there we are. Hair.
About my time, I was at the fourth birthday party when it was on Broadway. That was fun.
So you're the fourth year, so that would have been probably 1970. I saw it in 1971. When it was on the road in Houston, Texas. It is, I guess we're showing our age, because
yes,
it is
exactly.
The 50th anniversary of its opening. So,
you know, it was written in Hoboken, New Jersey.
I'm not surprised. It was James Rado
and they lived in Hoboken.
Whatever his name is, the other guy. And they did do a sequel, and a friend of mine was the stage manager for it, and that would have been in the 80s, maybe,
what
the
was
early
it called?
80s. Pardon me?
What was it called?
I forgot.
Yeah.
I should have done that. So it is the 50th anniversary, and that is indeed why I played it. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Before we get to that point, let me just say that what a great show we did at the International Folk Bazaar. International kids music. I think that's so much fun. And one of the songs that he played reminded me of my time in... I want to say junior high school. My Spanish teacher taught us this little ditty. And I don't know if it's a ditty. It's more of a poem. I usually say poem, but I just decided to go poem today. You ready? Here we go. Chocolate, chocolate, bate, bate, chocolate. That was the poem. And so, lo and behold, I think Kim's second song was that poem. So... I don't know. I felt vindicated as a human being because of it. So let's talk about who's here with us. Ann Chicklell.
Hello.
You came here. You were expecting to just be a guest, and now you're the co-host. Congratulations.
You know, I haven't been the co-host in so long.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
You have a whole list of Nicole Chereau and Nick Mayo, and I am glad to bring up the rear.
Good. Okay. No comment. We also have here, hold on, let me turn on your microphone so you can speak to Mr. Toby Miner. Hi, Toby.
Hello.
I need you to pull that microphone and put it right next to your mouth.
There we go.
That's, you know, we really see how the sausage is made here on offstage and on the air. I believe my new pronunciation for Nicole is going to be Chereau.
Okay.
Because that's what you just said.
Okay.
So I'm now pronouncing her name differently, Nicole Chereau. waiting for Chereau, as I like to say.
Oh, that's good.
You go. So we had a little announcement of an award that's going to take place in June. Did y'all follow the Tony nominations?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, get ready. We're going to start talking about it.
Oh,
and,
good.
And so they had the list of nominations, which took place Tuesday morning, early Tuesday morning, announced by one Laura Benanti and one
Love
Leslie
that Laura
Odom
Benanti.
Love, and she got snubbed.
Well,
she got snubbed.
That happens.
People, I don't love her so much. I love her. Who cares if she gets snubbed? But people are saying that she did such a wonderful job in Meteor Shower, the Steve Martin play that was played last season, but did not get a nomination. And they also mentioned in some of the things I read how difficult it is for comedic performers to get nominated. Here's how I feel. Let's talk
Share.
About this. Well, I think comedy is more difficult than dramatic pieces in terms of from an acting perspective. Do y'all agree with that?
In a lot of cases, yeah.
Not every case, but yeah. I mean, generally speaking.
In general, comedy is much harder. Comedy is much more specific.
Right, and from an audience standpoint, right or wrong, I mean, if you really, you know, it's much easier to sort of take that stance of feeling your words than it is to have that timing to make people laugh. Mm-hmm. All right, well, okay. Thought that was going to be controversial. It's not.
No.
So, best musical is The Band's Visit, Frozen, Mean Girls, and SpongeBob SquarePants. Mm-hmm. So, what was that? Toby Miner just made a face. What was that?
I didn't realize SpongeBob was a
musical. Oh, it's big.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And everybody was, you know, we were sort of making fun of it as it came on. And then when it opened, raves around the... And the only thing I saw them perform at the Thanksgiving Day Parade. Mm-hmm, did you see it?
Mm-hmm, I did.
What'd you think?
Not much, but, you know, I think it's just a colorful costume show and we love SpongeBob.
I've never seen SpongeBob. Have either of you?
Oh, yeah.
My kids love SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. And actually, some of the writing is actually quite funny on those TV shows. So if they're having any of the same people, then there's probably some decent stuff, I suppose.
Clearly, it was enough to create a musical about it. So Frozen and SpongeBob, both, they got not great reviews. They didn't get terrible reviews in terms of long-term stuff. But I think one of the things that I always thought, and still do think, The Band's Visit is slated to win. And The Band's
really?
Visit,
oh, I don't.
Think it was slated to win, and before all this happened, and by this I mean, SpongeBob.
I think the music for The Band's Visit is really fun. I think the story's fun. Mm-hmm. And
did you see the movie that it's based on?
I have not seen the movie that it's based on. I've seen a lot of clips from the.
It's interesting play. If you see the musical. Movie, and you watch the movie, and then just say in your head. That person that saw that movie and said, I think this would make a good musical. It's just, I don't
see
it.
Well, let me say, Sweeney Todd. That was my, because I knew Sweeney Todd as a Grand Guignol piece. And I was like, they can't do that.
Was it a book?
No, it's a play.
Oh, okay. I did not know. Okay.
Yes, that's the story.
Written by whom?
Oh, it's some turn of the century melodrama guy. And I now say, if you're brilliant enough, you can do anything.
This is true. This is true. So The Band's Visit, but the
Tony
big thing,
Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub and Katrina Link. And Katrina Link is my new favorite person. And she will win Best Actress, in my opinion. I think Tony Shalhoub is as well. Frozen got the nod. Interestingly enough, neither Patty Mirren or I don't know the other woman's name, the two leads in it, got snubbed. They did not get anything. For the best play is The Children, Farinelli and the King. The winner will be Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Junk. And the interesting thing that came out, and I was surprised at this, they have five. Normally you'd have four. Latin History for Morons, the John Leguizamo play. Hmm. Everybody's scratching their head over that one and why it was. So, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, yeah, you know that's going to win, right?
Well, it's magic.
Yeah, it is. It is magic. Interestingly enough, there are two. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child has a nomination for best choreography.
Mm.
So it's a straight play. It's got a choreography, and then
maybe it's the magic
for score. Angels in America has a nomination. okay, so that's best musical, best play. Best revival is every revival that's there, which is Carousel, My Fair Lady, and Once on This Island.
Carousel.
The revival of the play. Are you a Carousel fan or not a Carousel fan?
That also was a, Lilium was a play. I'm mixed on Carousel. There are songs I love. The book, it's a little hard.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. And there's some beautiful songs in it.
Yeah.
And both My Fair Lady and Carousel, which before they opened were sort of fraught around the female characters in the Me Too movement because they're mm-hmm. not really written very strong. And, mm-hmm. you know, especially the ending of mm-hmm. My Fair Lady, the way we customarily know it is not strong. And we mm-hmm. talked about this on the show before, mm-hmm. but they fixed all that. And they seem to work within not the confines, but in the Me Too environment, they are just fine. So that's interesting. And Once on This Island, I don't know which one of these three is going to win. Mm. Haven't seen any of them.
We will find out.
June 6th, I think, or 10th. Best revival of a play was, and this was a hefty category. Lots of good stuff here. Angels in America. Both Angels in America and Cursed Child are 7-hour plays. Done in two parts. Lobby Hero, Three Tall Women, and what's her name is going to win the Best Actress. Glenda Jackson will win Best Actress for that. Mark my words. The Iceman Cometh, which just opened last week, and we're going to talk about that. And Travesties, which could be just a travesty. Best Leading Actor in a Play, Andrew Garfield for Angels in America, Tom Hollander for Travesties, Jamie Parker for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, Mark Rylance for Farinelli and the King, and Denzel Washington for The Iceman Cometh. Mm-hmm. He got great reviews. We're just going to talk about that in just a second. Okay. Best Leading Actress in a Play, Glenda Jackson, Three Tall Women, who mm-hmm. she'll win. Mark my words. Condola Rashad in St. Joan, which just opened last week.
That sounds really interesting, doesn't it?
Lauren Ridoff for Children of a Lesser God, which did not get good reviews.
I like that show a lot.
I have not seen the movie, and I did not see it in...
the original production was spectacular, but it was one of those things...
I know Mark Medoff.
You do?
I went to the school I got my BA at. He helped found the theater program there and was always there helping with the writing program and everything. Cool.
And that school is... phenomenal, and she didn't make the movie, so... Mm.
It's true. Yeah. Well, you had Marley Matlin that did, but John Rubenstein did. Mm-hmm. He made the movie. Mm-hmm. What school?
New Mexico State.
I love New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. There's different light in New Mexico.
Yes.
Just saying. Best Leading Actor in a Musical, Harry Hayden Patton for My Fair Lady, Joshua Henry for Carousel, Ethan Slater for SpongeBob SquarePants, which you have to say it that way.
Yes.
SpongeBob SquarePants. And Mr. Tony Shalhoub for The Bland's Visit.
Tony Shalhoub.
He supposedly is just awesome in that. Best Leading Actress in a Musical, Lauren Ambrose for My Fair Lady. She got awesome reviews. Hayley Kilgore for Once on This Island. LaChance for Summer, the Donna Summer mm-hmm. musical, which I believe this is their only nomination. Mm-hmm. Katrina Link, The Band's Visit. She will win. Taylor Lauterman for Mean Girls and Jesse Mueller for Carousel.
Jesse Mueller.
Yeah. There you go. It's good with that. So the only other one, I don't want to go through all of them. You can find this on the interwebs. But let's just talk about director in the director category because we're a quandary of directors, which is the plural term. For directors, quandary.
I like it.
So Marianne Elliott for Angels in America, Joe Mantella for Three Tall Women, Patrick Marber for Travesties, John Tiffany for Harry Potter, and George C. Wolfe for The Iceman Cometh, and he got a very nice review. George C. Wolfe. Best Direction in a Musical is Michael Arden for Once on This Island, David Cromer for The Band's Visit, Tina Landau for SpongeBob SquarePants. Casey Nicholaw for Mean Girls and Bartlett Sher for My Fair Lady. The only other thing I want to announce here, because it's a category that left and is now back. So sound design came back, and but only about 50% of the Tony voters can vote on sound. So both sound and orchestrations, they take a subset of Tony voters to let them vote on it. Evidently, you have to have some kind of expertise, but you don't have to have any expertise to vote on anything else. Sound design in a play: Adam Cork for Travesties, Ian Dickinson for Autograph, it says, but it's Angels in America.
I
don't know what that means. Gareth Frey for Harry Potter, Tom Gibbons, 1984, Moses Schroer, The Iceman Cometh, And in the musical category, Kai Harada for The Band's Visit, Peter Hilinski for Once on This Island, Scott Lair, who I know, is a friend of mine, for Carousel, Brian Ronan for Mean Girls, and Walter Trarbach and Mike Dobson for SpongeBob SquarePants. There will be special Tonys given to Cheetah Rivera. And somebody named, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pronounce his name properly, Andrew Lloyd Webber. Other special Tonys, and this is, I so wish Nicole were here, because this is one of those things that you wind her up and she goes crazy. John Leguizamo is getting one, as is Bruce Springsteen. So do you, either of you, so Nicole is incensed that Bruce Springsteen is on Broadway and called a Broadway show. Every critic out there says this is not just a concert. It's something different. It's something somewhere between a Broadway show and a concert. But she's like, she's adamant that it's a concert. It doesn't deserve to be on Broadway. He decided himself not to be eligible. So he didn't. So the Tony voters, he didn't have to provide seats to the Tony voters. but he's getting a special. Do you either of you have an opinion on his show? Have you read enough about it to know whether or not you think it's legitimate to be on Broadway?
I mean, I think concerts can be on Broadway. I don't see that as a problem. I don't know if it's a play.
No, it's definitely not a play. But he does he brings the audience intimately into his life. It's not a concert per se. It's definitely not a play. So, I just wanted to talk about another.
Lisa, what did you want to talk about?
Well, I want to find the other thing I want to talk about, which was there's a lot of articles around the Tonys. I'm not going to talk about that. But right after the Tony nominations were out, Ben Brantley and Jesse Green, the two critics for the New York Times, got together and had a chat. And their conversation is in the New York Times. And I wanted to just go through a couple of the things that I learned from this. One of the things that I did not know is that the Tony Committee, and I'm just going to read what Jesse Green says. The Tony Administration Committee decreed that only categories with 9 or more eligible competitors will get the usual 5 nominations. So in order to have 5 nominations, you have to have at least 9 competitors. So if you had 8 competitors, you have to stick with 4 or less. So I thought that was interesting. Frozen got nothing. Which is interesting. And Patty Murin, as I said, and Cassie Levy were snubbed both. And they are likening Frozen to Wicked, because that's the audience it attracts, the same group of people. So,
and the budget that it was built on.
Exactly. Jesse Green said, perhaps most surprising was that neither Cassie Levy or Patty Murin, as Elphaba and Galinda, Elsa and Anna, get nods for lead actresses. So that was an interesting thing. And again, Ben Brantley found it interesting that Latin History for Morons was nominated for Best Play. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I wanted to see, again, Jesse Green was disappointed not to see Laura Benanti as a nominee. I think there were almost 8 or 7 shows that got 10 nominations or more. That's huge. Mm-hmm. So that's the Tonys. I'm sure we'll be talking about that ad nauseum for the next month or so before the actual things. And as all of our listeners know, every year, I should have started it today, but I guess we'll be starting it next week. Mm-hmm. We give our guests ballots, and they check them off. Then we tally them up after the awards and see how good we were. That's it. So let's talk about The Iceman Cometh. First of all, it's one of my favorite Eugene O'Neill plays.
Really?
I love it. And it's long. It's 4 hours long. And
did you know that Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was inspired as a rebuttal to Iceman Cometh?
Really? In what way? Yeah.
Albee said he felt like Iceman Cometh was negative about illusions, and that you have to have illusions to live, and he wanted to dig deeper in what illusions could do to you. So
interesting.
Yeah,
I would love to see Albie and O'Neill have an arm wrestling match. See what would happen. But the Iceman cometh, and the interesting thing here is, and so let me backtrack. Not really. As I was reading this, I was thinking about the ensemble. And this is truly an ensemble piece, even though the character of Hickey, who doesn't show up for an hour after, is really the quote lead, and Denzel Washington is playing them. It's really an ensemble piece. Mm-hmm. And how do you guys feel about, you heard that Equity is lobbying to get Best Ensemble as a Tony category. What do y'all feel about that?
I think it's cool. I mean, the problem is ensemble just doesn't fit with every year.
True.
So if you could, you know, if it's appropriate, do it. I think it's great.
Yeah, they wanted to do an ensemble and a chorus, mm-hmm. best chorus,
yeah.
which is, best chorus is a little bit easier to define.
Right, right.
But certain things don't have an ensemble.
Right.
Well, and I think like you just said, the word defined, the problem, my issue with an ensemble award is it has to be so really defined. What is an ensemble and what does that mean within the context of what you're watching? That it's hard to pin that down for an award, because what does that mean? And that shifts, you said, year to year or show to show. Or
and further, if you are the recipient, if you are in the ensemble and you win, does that mean you are individually a Tony winner?
Yeah.
When that carries a lot of weight in terms mm-hmm. of your negotiating power, et cetera. Or are you the member of an ensemble
right.
that won a Tony
category? Yeah.
So it's interesting. Anyway, but I was thinking that Iceman Cometh would be a perfect vehicle for that. So Ben Brantley wrote this review, and he said his first sentence is, he says, if you have a good time at a production of The Iceman Cometh, does that mean the show hasn't done its job? He really enjoyed it. He said he was smiling quite all the way through it. It had a different feel than most other Iceman Cometh he's seen before. He really liked Denzel in this role versus the other ones that he saw, which is Kevin Spacey and, God, who else?
I think of Jason Robards as the Hickey.
I do too, actually. That's but that's not in Jesse Green's era.
Or sure.
Actually,
sure.
It would be in Ben Brantley's era.
Yeah.
But this is a love letter for it. Other actors in it, I mean, it's got a great cast. Colm Meaney, Bill Irwin, Danny McCarthy, Tammy Blanchard, Neil Huff, Reg Rogers, Michael Potts, and Frank Wood round out the cast. And they just, he just loved Denzel Washington. And who comes in, Hickey comes in, they're all waiting for him because he's going to be the life of the party. They're all sitting in this bar getting drunk and talking about how life is awful. And Hickey comes in and sober and screws them all up and talks about, and I remember reading this when I was a teenager, and pipe dream is a phrase that is used over and mm-hmm. over and over again. And so whenever I hear that phrase in any context, I think of this play.
Oh, wow.
So that's that. Let's see what else. The scenery was done by Santo Loquasto, and it's mm-hmm. supposed to, and it's an abstract set, which I think is sort of interesting because mm-hmm. it's usually a very realistic bar. Ann Roth did the costumes. Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower did the lighting.
Top people there.
Yeah. He says it's the wondrous color-coded lighting. I'm not quite sure what that means. But it's interesting. He said that this show, this version of Iceman, was more like an opera or an oratorio than a conventional drama. Mm. So after reading this, it's something I really would love to see. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you don't necessarily hear called out in a review very often is hair and wigs. So mm-hmm. that the person, Mia Neal, who did the hair and wigs, got a nod. So I don't know why I did... at the very end of Act 4, Hickey does a long monologue where he sort of sums everything up, and it's usually done to the patrons at the bar as sort of an admonition and telling them what the world is really like. But in this case, the director had Denzel bring a chair downstage center, and he presented it to the audience.
Cool. Very
so
Shakespearean.
Interesting. Yes. Anyway, that's It makes me want to see it. I want to see what some of the other, I want to share what some of the other critics said, if I have that piece of paper here, because there were some interesting other things, and maybe I did not bring that piece of paper.
Yeah, I mean, Brantley basically said he's worth the price of admission.
Yes. And, well, I have a issue around star power or star turns, although Denzel is evidently really, really doing well. So Charles Isherwood said, Denzel Washington, who has earned a reputation as one of Broadway's finest leading men, matching his eminence in film, radiates a ferocious energy from the moment he bounds on stage at the Bernie Jacobs Theater. And this is what the Wraps, Robert Hoffler, said. Actors Equity's position, the Tony, and I pat myself on the back because I had this thing about the ensemble before I read this. Actors Equity has petitioned the Tonys to add an ensemble acting award to its annual spring contest. That request couldn't have a stronger support than George C. Wolfe's revelatory staging of The Iceman Cometh. Wolfe pushes his cast, led by Denzel Washington, to uncommon excellence. And it really seems like an actor's version of this show, or a director's slash actor's version. And then finally, in a daring but quite devastating piece of stage business, Washington turns his chair around and delivers Hickey's long monologue directly facing the audience. You want to talk theater? Take that, people. That was Marilyn Stasio of Variety. So that's The Iceman Cometh. Are we ready to go see it?
Yeah, yeah, and Marilyn Stasio is still around?
Evidently. Okay, I was worried about not having enough time, but we're out of time at this section. So let me see what else I want to just talk about really quick. Like, are you familiar with the show 2666?
No.
Bolaño. It's being streamed online free. It's a 5.5-hour stage adaptation. It's being done in Chicago.
Oh.
And it looks really interesting. I watched the teaser
but
for
it.
It's
like 2066. Yes, I am familiar with it.
2666.
Okay.
Yeah. So 2666. I didn't know. Yeah. You're familiar with it.
Yeah. 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 Well, I saw the arts briefly in this Times.
Yeah. So I like to see that. The Jimmy Awards are coming up in a few months, and that's going to be hosted by Laura Benanti.
Laura Benanti.
Yeah. And that's it. We're going to have... I did want to talk about this Cyrano at the Goodspeed.
Yeah, I saw that on the list. I'm not familiar.
You're not familiar with Cyrano?
Well, no. I'm familiar with Cyrano and the musical Cyrano, may I say.
And that's what this is.
I have the vinyl.
Oh, you do? I do. Okay, so this is Cyrano, the musical.
It's not very good.
And it's going to be done... It isn't?
No, the music is not great.
Okay. Well, it's at Goodspeed.
I'd love to see it.
And it's going to be done... Peter Dinklage is playing Cyrano.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think that's amazing.
Well, he's wonderful. I mean, he's terrific.
Yeah, he really is. I've never seen him on stage, but certainly I have seen him in a little show called Game of Thrones. So it is going to be done at the Terrace Theater in Connecticut, but I guess produced by Goodspeed.
Huh.
Yeah. All right, let's take a little break, and we'll come back after that, and we'll talk to you guys about the little play you're putting on.
Our skit.
your skit. So we'll be right back. Let's listen to Tony Winner, The Band's Visit.
Thank you.
And here's this man right here beside
me. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. We have been here talking with Ann Ciccolella and Toby Miner, and we will continue talking to Ann Ciccolella and Toby Miner. But before we do that, I have to do our legal ID, and this is normally we choose a number at random, but I have chosen this one, and it's a little teaser for our second half interview. Here it is.
Hi, I'm George Takei. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby.
Perfecto.
Now, what does Hornsby mean?
That was George Takei, who we will be talking to a little later on in the program. We had a lovely conversation last night. So let's talk about Austin Shakespeare's upcoming production, which starts previews this evening.
It does. It does.
It's The Merry Wives of Windsor.
It is true.
Which I have never seen nor read. So I'm looking forward to... I know. I'm looking forward
this
to seeing
it. This is right up your alley, sister.
It is. And I have a lot of alleys. So tell us about it.
You know, merry can sometimes mean a little risque.
I do not.
These girls are really happy. Okay. So Babs George and Gwendolyn Kelso, who's co-directing, as we talked about before the show.
So minor actors here in Austin.
Two of our favorite actresses are the Merry Wives of Windsor. Oh. But they have tricks up their sleeves. Toby plays Falstaff, who, you know, Shakespeare wrote into some of the history plays, yes. Henry IV, Part 1 and 2 and Henry V.
I have, by the way, had his beer.
Falstaff's beer, very yeah, good. Good.
Okay,
very good.
So I'm sorry.
I had no, to that's quite right. And,
it's a staff of life.
It is said that Queen Elizabeth liked the character of Falstaff so much that she asked Shakespeare to put Falstaff in a play in which Falstaff would be in love.
Oh.
Well, Shakespeare, in his witty way, kind of made Falstaff a flirt and got him to not just fall in love, but get tricked a number of times. So Toby gets 3-4 tricks, really. And he's going to read some stuff.
Now, you usually, or one usually, I usually see people that are playing Falstaff are large and portly.
Yes.
Toby Minor is not large and portly.
Oh, he becomes so.
Do you become so in
I
this?
Do. I have lots of accoutrements that make me such.
And some ice packs, too.
Yes.
And ice packs. Yes. Oh, to keep you cool.
To keep me cool.
Okay,
yes,
cool.
Because it gets pretty warm out there.
Yes, yes, yeah. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
So, let's hear a little bit of it. What lines do we need to set them up at all?
This is one of the scenes where Falstaff is coming in to Mistress Ford, and he's trying to put his game on. And he comes in. I'm going to squeeze some of the stuff. I'm going to take her lines out a little bit and just kind of squeeze it together. But this is his first big attempt to try and win her over.
And he's an older man, man.
He's
I
a little
say.
Bit older.
Falstaff is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, older than this woman.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, awesome. Well, let's listen to Toby Minor doing some scenes from Austin Shakespeare's production of The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Have I caught thee, my heavenly jewel? Why now let me die, for I have lived long enough. Oh, this blessed hour. Mistress Ford, I cannot cog, I cannot prate, Mistress Ford. No, now shall I sin in my wish. I would thy husband were dead. I'll speak it before the best lord. I would make thee my lady. Let the court of France show me such another. I see how thine eye would emulate the diamond. Come, thou canst not hide it. What made me love thee? Let that persuade thee there's something extraordinary in thee. Come, I cannot cog and say thou art this and that. I cannot. But I love thee, none but thee, and thou deservest it.
Oh, excellent.
Toby, tell everybody what you're doing during these lines.
I'm basically chasing her around a couch. I'm trying to mount her at one point, and she slips out of the way.
My.
And there's flipping over the couch, and there's all kinds
Toby.
Of...
Yeah.
So there's all that kind of stuff going on.
Well, so I am presuming by looking at the poster that this is not set in Shakespearean times.
Right. Gwen Kelso really wanted to set this in sort of a sitcom. I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke, Carol Burnett. So it's got a lot of physical
comedy. Do you have a laugh track?
We don't have a laugh track because you
I
are
provide
be the
laugh
track. The sound, though, is incredible because it's all this period commercials, period music, Rocky and Bullwinkle. I mean, it's Lowell Bartholomew is really brilliant.
Yeah, he is. There is nobody that seems to be his equal. He is. He's
clever.
The grand dame of sound design in Austin, and sound and video design in Austin.
Yeah.
So Lowell is doing your sound.
We have 3 turntables. Patrick Anthony designed the set and lights, and so people are having a lot of fun.
Wow. I just love turntables.
Yeah.
And they can be fraught.
Yeah.
These
are really easy ones.
Okay.
So I've had been fraught with ones, but Patrick and Chaz Sanders, who's our props designer and TD, really worked on them, and they work beautifully. I was really happily surprised at the
lovely
so
built
well.
Especially for you guys,
yeah,
for the show.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's good news. And y'all are outside at the Zilker Hillside.
We are. And if anybody worries about rain, I see the sun coming out right now out our door. But austinshakespeare.org is a great location for information. Mm-hmm. From 4 o'clock on each day of performance, we'll tell you how it's doing out there. But generally, we go on.
I'll tell you what, though. I love the outdoor theater experience. I believe I've come to see every year. quite the opposite for the Zilker Summer Musical because it's just too darn hot for me. You guys have the best time of year to perform out there because it's never
pool,
sweltering.
You know, Barton Springs Pool creates a sort of breeze in the month of May.
Okay.
And it works.
Okay.
It works.
I'll, you know, if you want to believe that.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's true. I have no problem. I'm pretty sure I've come every year to see your show.
Well, thank you for your support. Absolutely.
Well, you are quite welcome. And I will continue to come. And so you're doing previews tonight.
Tonight is the preview. Tomorrow is opening night. Uh-huh. And we have some fabulous, colorful costumes by Benjamin Taylor Rindsway. Describe your costume, Toby.
I have a couple different costumes, but there's a Hawaiian shirt theme that goes with
of course. Lot. What else
and
would fall
staff
wear?
And in that romantic moment, he has a cummerbund.
I do have a cummerbund and bow tie that are pretty spectacular with suspenders.
Yeah, so also what you think of Falstaff is like his garb is always rather flamboyant.
Yeah, it's very gaudy.
Gaudy. So we're clearly taking that same toll.
But the whole show is quite colorful. I mean, that was Gwen's idea, was to have sort of primary colors and really bright and
it's pretty
pop.
And it's fun and it's moving and it's constant movement and motion and it's a lot of fun.
So as I admitted to you earlier, I have not seen nor read this show, so I'm really just a blank slate. But typically in Shakespeare's comedies, there's love interest.
Yes.
And we hear. I keep wanting to say Toby Belch, because I sort of put Toby Belch and Falstaff in the same thing. So Falstaff, we just heard that. Are there also love interests for the Merry Wives?
The Merry Wives have husbands whom they love.
Oh.
Yeah, so Chuck Winkler is fantasy. Mr. Page, and Nick Lawson is Mr. Ford, and they're hilarious. Uh-huh. But there's an ingenue, and there's a lover who wants to marry her, and her parents do not want her to marry him, so there are other comic characters mm-hmm. that they want her to marry because they're wealthy.
And how lovely. I'm all for that. How large is this cast?
15.
15? That's a nice size cast to work with.
It's a great Shakespeare cast.
And as we were talking about before, you are co-directing along with Gwen Kelso.
Yeah. So this was Gwen's concept, and she, you know, had a great idea for it, and I said I would support her, but I wanted her to be in the show. So I said I would direct her Mistress Ford scene, so that's actually been a lot of fun. It's really worked.
Awesome. So now what haven't I asked you that I should ask you? I feel like...
There's dancing.
Oh.
Yes.
Lovely.
Shakespeare, we think, ends all his shows with dancing. We know he ended Julius Caesar with a dance. So we figure if he ended Julius Caesar with a jig, we could end Merry Wives with a jig. So Rebecca Whitehurst from uh-huh. St. Ed's has come and done a great sort of Lindy Hop swing dance ending, and it just looks great.
And what is it? Is it original music, or are you
actually
choosing music from
there's a song written by Peter Stupinski uh-huh. that is just adorable, which they sing to Toby.
Oh, yeah. How nice is that?
It's very nice.
Yep. Well, excellent. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Good.
So you, again, you preview tonight, you open tomorrow. How long do you play?
Every weekend in the month of May. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights at 8:00. And we go through a Memorial Day weekend.
Awesome. And where can folks go to get more information?
AustinShakespeare.org.
And you can learn all sorts of other stuff about Austin Shakespeare when you go to that website, because they just don't do this one thing.
Yeah, Young Shakespeare is coming up with Hamlet. So we hope to be back to talk
about
that.
Have you cast that yet?
That is cast as an ensemble. They all have to come together to the first rehearsal, and then we will delegate the roles.
Oh, that's fascinating. So if you don't mind, I'd just like to ask you a couple questions about that. Are you directing that?
I'm directing with Nancy Owens.
Okay.
Yeah. Nancy
and Ryman. So when you bring the, and does this happen for each young Shakespeare?
Yes.
Is this the way to, so when
yes.
you bring them together yes. in that first rehearsal, do yes. you know who the, do you know who
we
it is?
We have most, yes, we have okay. like, let's try this. And we might have some, let's try this, let's try that. One thing that Gwen mentioned to our Merry Wives cast is when the Royal Shakespeare Company came to Brooklyn to do their show, when they rehearsed for a month, nobody rehearsed their own role. Everybody read everybody else's role.
Interesting.
And then right before they were starting their rehearsals in earnest, then they got their role. So that kind of ensemble and getting the idea of what it sounds like, because everybody has a different interpretation.
I love that idea. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, we love having you here, and please come back.
Thank you.
I should say here at this point that we normally do a offstage at backstage at Offstage, but we will be not be doing that today. So that's it. So don't expect to get any little gems of notions about who Aunt Chicklella and Dobie Minor actually are. Okay, they're just Austin Shakespeare people to us. Okay. Didn't solicit a response. Okay, so that was Aunt Chicklella and Dobie Minor. Their show, Austin Shakespeare's Merry Wives of... William Shakespeare's Merry Wives of Windsor, produced by Austin Shakespeare's at the Zilker Hillside Theater from May 3rd to the 27th. More information, austinshakespeare.org. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. I'm missing my co-hosts, Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo, but I was left in very good hands with Aunt Chicklella of Austin Shakespeare, who is known as our always an official co-host because she comes and helps us a lot. So I'm just going to jump right into our next section, which is our interview with George Takei, who is playing at the Long Center this Friday in a lecture series that seems extremely interesting, but I will let him talk about it. Nicole and I spoke to him yesterday by phone, so let's just jump right in and listen to that interview. Stand by. Nicole and I are sitting here in the studio talking by phone with George Takei. No other introduction, I think, is needed.
I don't think so.
So we're just going to say, George Takei, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be chatting with you.
Well, we are
so
excited.
So excited.
I do have to tell you, as I told folks around the radio station and around the other parts of my life in my theater, which I run, and I said I was going to be interviewing George Takei, to a nobody was anything other than flabbergasted.
Really?
Yes.
I'm flabbergasting people in Texas.
You are flabbergasting, and that is a technical term.
And this is the capital of Texas, isn't it?
It is
Austin,
indeed.
Texas.
We have a big pink Capitol building here where they it's a lovely pink building that they do evil things in.
You call it pink?
It is
it
pink.
It is. It's,
I've been there.
The pink granite.
I thought it was white.
Pink.
It's pink, is it?
It's pink.
I'll have to take another gander at it. I've been to Austin not only for a few Star Trek conventions, but... a few transit conferences.
Oh, so you were involved in the world of transit as well?
Yes, we planned and began the construction of the newest subway system in the United States, and now we are expanding that because Los Angeles is becoming a very dense city. Over 7 million people.
Well, you know, this is one of the fascinating things about you. As we were talking before we called you, there's just so much. It's what haven't you done? our show, believe it or not, is not about government, but about theater.
Yes, of course.
So
it's
I want to
offstage and on the air.
Exactly. So I am just, we have talked so much here, and we followed Allegiance. It made its Broadway run, and it's now this month it's going to be opening in Boston. I know.
And we just closed in Los Angeles.
And you just closed in Los Angeles. So I find the whole thing fascinating. I love the story. Could you tell our listeners the story about the genesis of Allegiance? Because it started its life in a Broadway theater, did it not?
It did, but actually the genesis of it was the fact that I spent a chunk of my childhood imprisoned behind American barbed wire fences in an American concentration camp run by the U.S. government right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, simply because we Americans of Japanese ancestry happened to look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. Historically, it's one of the most egregious violations of our Constitution. You know, we're Americans. My mother was born in Sacramento. My father was a San Franciscan. They met and married in Los Angeles, and my brother and sister and I were born here in Los Angeles. And yet, because we look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor, we were summarily rounded up with no charges. We were rounded up at gunpoint and put into these barbed wire prison camps. There were 10 of them, all in the most hellish places in this country. Okay. And we had no idea how timely, how relevant our story would be today.
Yeah, exactly. It's very relevant.
Eerie and needed.
But I'd sort of like to hear about, so you met Jay Kuo, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing their names, and Lorenzo Theone.
Theone
at an off-Broadway show. And you shared your story with them.
Yes. In fact, we've met in a fortuitous way. We went to an off, my husband Brad and I, when we're in New York, we spent almost every night in the theater, and we went to see an off-Broadway show called Forbidden Broadway, if you're familiar with that.
Oh, very yes. Familiar with that.
It's a satire on all the hit Broadway musicals. And we sat there chatting with each other, and there were two empty seats in front of us. These two guys came. One was Asian, and one was Caucasian. And they sat down, and the Asian guy recognized my voice and turned around and said, "You're George Takei, aren't you?" And we chatted for a while, and it began. And then during the intermission, we chatted again, and we went back to our apartment saying, "Boy, those guys are real passionate theater lovers, just like us." The next night, we went to see In the Heights, Lin-Manuel Miranda's very first play, which won a Tony.
It did at that.
Yes. And we we had aisle seats, and we found our seats, and we were about to sit. But we saw two arms waving at us from the middle of the same, very same row. And it happened to be the very same two guys. Two nights in a row. One night right in front of us, and the next night in the very same row, but separated by about four or five seats. And because they were occupied, we just waved at them, and we sat down, and we saw the musical. And so that was that fortuitous meeting. But what we were seeing was another fortuitous musical. It's a musical called In the Heights, about the Puerto Rican community, and focusing on one family with a very bright young daughter who wants to go to college. And near the end of the first act, there's a song sung by the father. The father wants to help his daughter go to college, but he can't afford to send her. And he sings a soulful song titled Inútil, which in Spanish means useless. He feels useless because he can't help his very bright daughter go to college. And somehow that song reminded me of an after-dinner conversation I had with my father as a teenager, talking about my asking him about our imprisonment during the Second World War. I was 5 years old when we were in prison, but this was a conversation that occurred when I was a teenager. And he told me how anguished, how tortured he was looking at his three children. I was the oldest at five. My brother was four, a year younger than me. And my baby sister was an infant, not even a year old. And he felt so helpless and useless, not knowing. The uncertainty of our future was what tore him apart. And that song made me remember that conversation. And I'm what's known as a weeper in the theater.
Join the club.
Good. I'm talking to kindred souls.
You are, yes. Indeed.
And but that was the last song before the intermission, and immediately after that song, the lights go blazing on, and I'm quickly wiping the tears off my face, and the two guys come clambering over knees to a chit-chat again, and they see me wiping my tears away, and they ask me why, and I told them, and thus that was the genesis of
Of Allegiance.
The musical Allegiance.
Yeah, which had a nice little run on Broadway, and you were filmed for movie theaters that has come several times throughout the country.
One night only performances.
Right, one night only, and the last was in December on the Pearl Harbor anniversary, was it not?
December 7th. No, the last one was on February 19th, 2018. February 19th is a significant day in the Japanese-American community. We call it the Day of Remembrance because that's the day that President Roosevelt signed the executive order ordering all Japanese-Americans on the West Coast to be rounded up and put into those internment camps. And so we chose both December 7th and February 19th as the days when we will have that screening. And ironically, on February 19th, 2017, last year, I was invited to speak at the Roosevelt Library, Franklin Delano Roosevelt Library at Hyde Park. It was an irony-filled day for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you are going to be speaking here at the Long Center on Friday.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be, what
Friday
that evening would be like?
I am going to be speaking on our people's democracy, which is so vulnerable, and how it profoundly affected my life. That childhood imprisonment was what defined my life for the rest of my life. It became my mission to share with people the vulnerability of our democracy at times of horrific, cataclysmic tragedy. People can suddenly be, people are fallible human beings, and people who know better can be swept away by the horror of that cataclysm and do irrational things. And that's precisely what happened to us. And the timeliness of the story of the imprisonment of Japanese Americans is that the same kind of thing is happening now.
That's true. That's true.
It's... Although I always point out that we have made progress. 76 years ago, when we were rounded up and imprisoned, the whole nation, including the President of the United States, who was a great man, he pulled the nation out of a crushing depression in the 30s when the fear swept through the country. He, as a politician, got stampeded by it.
Absolutely.
And did something completely against our democracy.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important that you're bringing that to light, making sure that people hear it and know the true history of the true story of the history of the United States and some of the things that happened, and so
and
that
then,
we can make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, in my life, there's another parallel event like that that happened later on in my life. I'm gay, but I spend most of my adult life closeted because of the social and legalistic forces. You know, it was criminal to be a gay. And so I realized then that it was just like my childhood imprisonment. As an adult, I was criminalized for being who I am. And so I realized how vulnerable our democracy is. The ideals are shining ideals, but the people who make that democracy work are fallible human beings.
Absolutely.
And you know, those two parallel events in my life has been my calling card, and that's what I'm going to be talking about.
And you are well known and beloved as a performer, as a theater artist, as a writer, and as probably more than anything else, as an advocate and activist for many, many, many things. And we're looking forward to seeing you on Friday. And unfortunately, we're plumb out of time.
Yes.
But I will be there in the audience cheering you on Friday.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us on Offstage and on the Air.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was George Takei. He will be speaking at the Long Center on Friday at 8 o'clock. For more information, you may visit thelongcenter.org. That was George Takei, and that little piece of music at the end was from his musical Allegiance, which we just spoke about. Wonderful interview. So we're out of time. So as I mentioned, there is no Backstage at Offstage today, but I will have a little extra on the podcast, a little extra George Takei, a little 2 or 3 minute piece that you're going to want to listen to. It will air right after this. So remember to go to offstageonair.com or go to iTunes and sign up for the podcast, and we'll get you all set squared away. So that's it for the show today. Remember, like us and review us on Facebook and all those other places that we always talk about. Hopefully the whole team will be together again next week. That's Nick Squared and me. We'll be back when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. If you're listening on terrestrial radio, stand by for Austin Monitor News. They are next. And we will go out today with something from If Then. And I chose it for no particular reason. We'll see you next week.
You never know how badly this could go. I've got disaster written on my...
And I do have to tell you, throughout this entire interview, I never realized how much I say the phrase... Oh my. And every time I thought about it coming out of my mouth, I said, nope, this is not the time to do that.
Oh, well, it's the most common phrase, isn't it?
It is.
Oh,
and
my.
I had no idea how much I say it.
As you have. But all it takes is one person named Howard Stern to get it on record.
True.
And whenever someone says something outrageous or does something outrageous, he presses that button and my voice comes on saying, oh, my.